July 1, 2020, it's a Watt from Pedro show.
Thank you. front door.
Wafra Pedro Show, happy Wednesday, first day of July. Still quit in quarantino mode, so Brother Matt's in Love Grotto 3 miles south of here. But due to those incredible software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I am not man alone. I have with me Jess Cornelius. Jess, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
And you're talking to me from Echo Park?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, but I detect an accent.
Yeah, I'm a New Zealander.
Or what I was taught, kiwi, because of the fruit or something.
Or the bird. Probably the bird.
Or the bird.
Yeah.
I first saw that bird on shoe polish when I was a boy. We used to have shoe polish, huh? And there was
kiwi shoe polish, yeah. I didn't realize that was an exported item.
I didn't know it was exported either, but it was like kind of a puck-sized case.
No, I know it well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You'd rub it on and buff it up and, yeah, that kind of thing. Wing tips. I should tell the people what we first heard. It was John Coltrane doing Consequences. And then you with the kitchen floor, which I think is your single, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the second. Well, there's been another one since then. But, yeah, that was the first single.
Okay. I want to go before that, Jess. What is your earliest musical recollection as a person?
The first song I remember hearing, consciously was at a barbecue and with my parents. I must have been really little, and it was, Last Christmas I don't know if it's Wham or if it's, George Michael, but, you know, the song. The last Christmas, I gave you my heart, and the very next day, you gave it away. You know that song.
He's a great singer. He lived for a while in Southern California.
Sorry, what was that?
He lived for a while in Southern California. In fact, famous incident in a public bathroom in Beverly Hills.
Oh, that was Beverly Hills, right. Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
But, you know, it's very sad, you know, because we lost him, but incredible singer and musician.
Exactly.
So your early is a Christmas song is what you remember at a barbecue. Oh, yeah, because south of the equator, your seasons are opposite.
Yes. Christmas is always summer. So, yeah, it's the beach and eating outside. Yeah.
I know, because I did a few of those. Well, we called it the big day off because it was like five gigs in 3 weeks. But the big day out was this festival, and that was the first time I was to Auckland and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was a huge festival for us. You know, that was our only festival, so that was a big deal. So, yeah.
So in the house you grew up, were you in the big town? Were you in Auckland?
No, I never lived in Auckland. I grew up in a town called Ngarawahia, which it's in the North Island, because, you know, New Zealand is two islands, and it's in the North Island. It's sort of in the middle, on the East Coast, and it's, yeah, like a tiny town.
Kind of rural?
It was kind of a bit of a, how do I explain it? It wasn't, I guess it would have been farmland around that, but the town itself was, I think the reason we lived there was because it was near another town called Hamilton, where my dad worked, on the hydro power station there. But there wasn't a lot going on in Ngarawahia. It was kind of a sad, it was a bit of a sad place. We were there, I think, because, yeah, Dad was working in the town nearby, and we got, we had like a bunch of, we had kind of a largish bit of land, I think, for not much money. So it was cool, you know, but we moved, it was a very, high percentage of, Māori people, so indigenous, New Zealanders, and that was great because we had to learn Māori language. It was compulsory, and we learned all the dances and all the myths and legends, and it was really cool. And then when I was 11, we moved to Wellington, which of course was very much, much more white, middle class, went to primary school there, and it was a completely different scene. You know, suddenly I had to, you know, the kids, everyone had Reeboks and these particular kinds of track bands and slash socks, and I had none of those things, and it was this total culture shock because I came from a town where people didn't have that stuff, you know, to somewhere where, like, you had to have that stuff because you would get pushed against the lockers and told to, you know, like...
Oh, yeah, children are so kind to each other.
Really kind.
There's a William Golden book called The Lord of the Flies that kind of talks about that. Was the house you grew up in, was there music?
Yeah, well, we didn't have a television for a really long time, probably till I was about 14 or 15, so... we always had music on, and the, you know, you would choose the music for dinner. Like, we always sat at the table and had dinner at the table, and there would always be music, and there'd be music on in the mornings, like Sunday mornings or so. Yeah. And you would, you know, choose the dinner music, and someone would choose the morning music. And yeah, it was always very, my mum also had a guitar lying around.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, were there instruments? There was a guitar.
Yeah, just a guitar. So my mum was a kindergarten teacher when we were really little, before we were born. And then, she had a guitar lying around, which I tried to get lessons when I was eight. I think I was eight, and I was in a class that was too advanced. I sort of gave up. Couldn't understand any of it. And then I started again. I had a primary school teacher.
Yeah, when I was going to ask you, in school, were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
Well, primary school is what I guess I'd call, so when I was probably 10, I started playing guitar a little bit because we had a teacher who taught us. And then when I went to high school in Wellington, I took music, but it was pretty stuffy. It was like, you know, I felt a little bit adrift because a lot of the people who took music had grown up learning piano and they had this theoretical background, and I never had that. I never learned piano. I didn't have a grounding in theory at all. So, I struggled a little bit with, you know, that side of things, and there was a choir. It was kind of our high school was like, had this really fancy choir that, you had to audition and everything, and I don't think I got in. I think I played trumpet in the orchestra. I was pretty good at trumpet, like not the theory part, but I could get, you know, all the really high notes.
Because a lot of it's the lip. People think it's the valves, but it's actually the lip. If you think about a bugle, it don't even have valves.
That's it, yeah. It's all about the pressure, so you can play one, you know, one fingering and get 10 different sounds.
Can I ask you, what was the first record you bought yourself?
The first record I bought myself, there were two on cassette. And I remember it was like, you know, for my birthday or Christmas or something, there was a store called the Music Man, local music store. And one was Paula Abdul. It might have been a single, actually. It was that song, Straight Up, Don't Tell.
No, I know she is. She helped organize the cheerleaders for the Los Angeles Lakers. I know about it, Paula Abdul.
Yeah.
What was the other one?
It was one of her singles. And then the other one was Wilson Phillips.
The Beach Boy, Brian Wilson.
So I obviously started off on a bit of a pop bent.
What about the first gig? What was the first gig you saw?
The first gig I saw, the first gig I saw, not really of my own volition, was I went with my grandmother to see Dionne Warwick. So that was kind of funny.
That's a good first gig. You know what my first gig was?
What's that?
T-Rex.
That's pretty nice. Yeah. That's a bit cooler.
Everybody says it. Look, I want to play No Difference.
Okay. And it all feels hard.
harder than normal. And you can't believe it happened again. So you concentrate hard on your breathing, 'cause it's easier than feeling what you feel. Heaven and hell is only a concept. If it makes no difference, you might as well be happy about it. It makes no difference how you feel. If it's gone, it's gone, and you gotta keep on doing. Be like how they say in that old nonfiction, just float along with the waves, just back and forth in any direction. And wherever you end up is gonna be the right way. Well, we know it's not true. It's so hard to be in a different life.
Watt for Pedro show? Yeah, no difference. Just Cornelius. And Case Elite after that, that's K, Black Flag with Broken. Bilge Pump out of Leeds. This is the last Bilge Pump tune. I've played like, I think, 40 of their tunes in a row, 38 of them. And Gondwana Girl, Pat Ruth and Smear, Pat from the Germs with his first solo record, late 80s, called Blue Punk Funk. Maya from the City, interlude, Tension in the Loin. It's got apostrophe, so I think it's abbreviation for Tenderloin, which can be a heavy neighborhood. And then finally, Body Memory from Jess Cornelius. So, Jess, what about the stuff where, like, after school, in the bedroom or the basement or the garage band, you know, with your buddies, did you do any of that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I've started writing songs on my mom's guitar. I wrote these, like, weird blues songs. I think that's the first, I guess, form that I learned. So I wrote a lot of very sort of traditional sounding blues stuff. I was listening to a lot of, like, Matty Waters and I was also listening to Nina Simone. And, like, my parents had these records. And then in high school, I also when I was about 15, I was dating this guy who was really into all these old blues artists, as well as, like, Neil Young and things like that. So we started writing together, and we had a band. We had several bands. When I was 15, I had this terrible band called Sitting Pretty, which is a terrible name, and we entered. There was this thing called the Rock Quest, and all the high schools would, you know, enter. It was like a battle of the bands, and so we came, like, we were finalists one year. I think when I was 16, we were finalists in this band, and so we used to practice at the drummer's house. She had this cool A-frame 70s house, and we used to practice there. In her bedroom, I think. And yeah, other than that, I just wrote songs at home. And also at high school, we had to perform some of these songs. So I was lucky to pass my exams, or pass my end of year, you know, mark. The teacher let me perform my own songs, which he didn't normally do, but, I think because I was making music that wasn't kind of like what the other people in the class were making. There was one other girl who was quite similar to me. We would write these weird sort of indie rock songs and perform them for school assessments, which was good that he would let us do that, and I passed.
You're talking about original material versus, like, copying off records and shit.
Well, I think the idea was that if people normally he would this teacher would get people to perform, you know, classical compositions. And so the composition, his theory was that if it was, it wouldn't be as difficult to play if you wrote it, if it was like an instrumental composition. So, but he dropped that rule for us. So me and this other girl could play our own, you know, contemporary music.
Own compositions.
Yeah.
And these compositions, were they instrumental, or did you sing?
Oh, no, I sang.
Okay,
I had this.
Okay. Well, you said, like, he liked old classical instrumentals.
Yeah. He was mostly in that realm, and so most of the students were also in that realm, that, you know, growing up playing, little Beethoven pieces. But he let us, he passed us, you know, playing our rock songs, you know, and with our bands. You know, I got my band to turn up at school, you know, the boys.
You're talking about Sitting Pretty.
Yeah, goddamn.
Can you tell me about the first Sitting Pretty gig?
Well, I think, because I was still at high school, we probably only played, we might have played in someone else's living room, like, at high school. But from what I remember, we only played these Battle of the Bands compositions, which is sort of weird. I mean, I didn't, at that point, we couldn't go into pubs or anything. And my other friends were not really into, like, a music scene or, There was no pub music scene for us at that point. The drinking age in New Zealand, like it is here, was, 20 or 21.
A gig is just playing for people. I want to hear about the first time you played for people with Sitting Pretty.
It
could be in the living room. That's okay.
Oh, yeah. Actually, we did do another show. That's right. I'm just remembering now. It's a long time ago. We used to hire out, in my last year of high school. I don't know if the band still had that name or if it was just I was doing my own name, going with my own name. But we used to hire, because we couldn't play in pubs, we used to hire these halls and put on gigs there. So there was a hall called Thistle Hall in Wellington. And, we played a gig there, I remember.
Was it scary? Were you into it?
Oh, I was always into performing. Yeah. I don't remember ever really feeling nervous.
Okay. So maybe it was your calling from the get-go.
I mean, of course I do get nervous now. It depends if what I'm doing is, if I feel like I'm playing a new song or something like that. I mean, I'm sure I was nervous. I just don't remember it. But
okay. I'm just always curious about the first gig because, that's how you got into this.
I just wanted to perform from the get-go. I mean, I was in, school plays and I loved being on stage. I was just one of those annoying kids, I guess,
After school, did you go to college for music?
Yeah, sort of. I went to this really strange music school, contemporary music school, and it was supposed to be 1 year, 2 years. It ended up only being 1 year because the course had so many problems. And it was sort of independently accredited, and it was contemporary, so it was, we learned technology and performance and composition, and you had to sort of audition to get in, but it wasn't like, really, in reality, it was sort of like a lot of people who, from all different ages. I mean, this was amazing for me because it wasn't like going to college where everyone's 17. It was, there were people in the course who were 25, who were 30. And a lot of the people had sort of been doing all these other things, and then they decided they wanted to study music and join bands. But really, I mean, all we did was smoke a lot of weed and form bands, and play music, which was great.
Well, yeah, it's a music school, right?
For that. it was great for me because I was fresh out of high school. For some of the other older people, I think probably it wasn't as, academically fulfilling. But for me, it was this huge eye-opener because I moved down to this town called Nelson in New Zealand, which was a kind of a fruit-picking town. There wasn't a lot going on. Again, we still couldn't play in bars, so we used to put on these gigs in these community halls. And I had a bunch of different bands. I had like a metal band called Glistening Fist.
Yeah.
And we played at a primary school.
Why didn't you give me some Glistening Fist to play on the show?
I have no idea where those recordings are. Okay. I'm sure there's a good reason. Yeah, I've moved so many times, cities. But yeah, I had a metal band called Glistening Fist, and then I had a band with this friend of mine called F. I don't know why, ETH, and why that name existed. I had a bunch of different bands, and at that time, I was dating this guy who was in this band who played at the Big Day Out, which was a big deal, and they were going on tour, and everything was music. I mean, all we did, it was just his band and my band and a bunch of other bands, and all we did was music. But the problem was is that at that point, we had terrible taste, so I was listening to all this.
Were you aware of, ask you, Jess, if you were aware of Flying Nun Records?
Have I heard of them? Do I know them? Yeah.
No, but that time when you were a girl.
Yeah, well, this is the kind of embarrassing thing, right, is that when I was at home in Wellington, that stuff, my parents used to listen to like the student radio. My parents have really great taste, and they were listening to the student radio, and the student radio used to play all of this Flying Nun music and the Dunedin sound, and you know, there was this television series I remember seeing before I left high school, which was on it really late at night, and it was called Topless Women Talk About Their Lives, and it was these 10-minute series, and the whole soundtrack was Flying Nun music from the late 80s and early 90s, and the chills and the clean and the bass.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you know, now I understand. If it's your parents' music, it's kind of an inclination for the children want to have their own thing.
Yeah, and so
that makes sense. See, I forget that I'm 62. Because, no, a lot of you cats, you might be 30 years, 40 years younger than me, but you can relate. It's way different than when I was a kid. You know what I mean? There's a really level playing field of people in music now. So yeah. I forget sometimes. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, July 1, 2020. Special guest, Jess Cornelius. Hold tap for hour two. July 1, 2020. It's the second hour of the Lock from Pedro show.
You and I don't talk about what happened anymore. I go out less than I did before. But every now and then I see you at a bar in town, and I wonder would I be happier, baby, if I never found you out. don't get what I feel I deserve. I work hard, but other people work harder than me. It's enough. I wish I didn't let it eat me up.
Pedro Show started the second hour off with Jess Cornelius doing Love and Low Self-Esteem, which sometimes, yeah, run hand in hand.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's a remedy, though. Sometimes it ain't.
That's it.
Then we had Mike Ragnetta. He's back to his 20-minute song a month. He had a couple months off there. But he's back with Superheated. And finally, Jealousy from Jess Cornelius. So kind of another love, or dealing with the love issue. Okay, so after this school that you went to, what was the name of it, by the way?
It was called the Nelson School of Music.
Ah, since it was in Nelson, the fruit picking town.
That's it, yeah, yep.
Makes a lot of sense. So what happened after that to you, Jess?
So after that, I was hanging around in Nelson for another 6 months with my band and my boyfriend's band. And at this time, and I was just working in a cafe making music. And it's a tiny town. There's nothing going on. So everyone at this point in New Zealand, all the bands were moving to Melbourne in Australia. That was like the thing that everyone was doing. So there was Shehead, there was Fur Patrol, there was this band called, I forget the name. Shehead and Fur Patrol were the two big ones. There's another band. They were moving, they'd relocated to Melbourne. So my boyfriend's band and my band, we decided, you know, we've all got to go to Melbourne. This is where the music scene is. This is where everything is happening. So I got my band, which was this woman and her husband. She convinced her husband to move to Melbourne as well. My parents bought me a one-way ticket, bless them, and I moved to Melbourne and with this band, with this bass player at least, and her husband. And
was that easy to go between New Zealand and Australia?
Is it what?
Was it easy to do, like, immigrate or whatever?
Yes, because, I mean, legally it's easy. You could at that point, it's a little different now, but at that point you could go over, you didn't have to, I mean, you still don't really have to have a visa or anything. but you can't, these days you can't like get social security and stuff as easily. But in those days you could go over and in 16 months kind of be on the dole, like if you wanted, you know, if you needed to. So yeah, you could just go over, and I had a cousin there. So I stayed with my cousin for a few months. And the whole plan was to go with my boyfriend's band, you know, and they never came. They just never came. So, he, you know, they were all kind of stoners, and they ended up getting this tour that they stayed for, and then, they stayed longer, and then the singer had kids and all this sort of stuff. So it was kind of funny because it was sort of their idea, really. They were very serious about their music, about their careers, and in the end, they never left. He did, you know, some of them did eventually, but.
You know, I got to play something here.
Yeah.
It's called Teeth and Tongue. Is this where this starts?
This starts a little later. Yeah. Okay. So Teeth and Tongue, I'd been in Melbourne for probably not eight years before Teeth and Tongue started. So
a long time.
Yeah. I was making music in Melbourne for like 19 years. So I had a band called, bass player that I came over with, we had a band called The Media, another terrible name. We started playing gigs around. I was organizing these gigs. I mean, I had no idea where to start in Melbourne. I didn't know anyone in music. I was playing open mic nights for the first year. I had no idea where to start. I was going to like Bushdorf raves with these friends who were making trance music, because that's the friends that I kind of fell in with, but no one was making the music that I was making. I felt like I spent, you know, several years in Melbourne, probably the first 4 or 5 years, kind of adrift in terms of music. Like, I was just making the music I was making, but no one I knew was, you know, I didn't have a scene or like anything like that. And it took years, and then I just gradually found my people, I guess. But I had another project called Jess Cornelius something, the Jess Cornelius Disorder, I think. And then I was playing a gig at this bar called Pony. It was like kind of a really well-known, like, late night. They used to have gigs at 2 a.m., which was cool. And I was playing the show, and I had this terrible drummer who was also an arsehole. I mean, a complete arsehole. And someone came up and said, hey, I know a better drummer, you know, you should get him. And so I met this guy called Jay, and then we started this band called Moscow Schoolboy. And I got a job at a guitar shop, and the other guy I worked with at the guitar shop was our bass player. So we had this band called Moscow Schoolboy for years. We got a label deal in Sydney, and we'd go up to Sydney and play shows up in Sydney. And I'd do this thing where I'd like just, you know, climb on the, you know, sort of cliched and stupid, I'd climb on the tables in the bar and sing and, you know, all this sort of crap. And then, it was, you know, it was fun. It's just sort of drunken. And then eventually Moscow Schoolboy broke up around 2007. And in 2008, I applied for a grant, because in Australia you can get all these government grants, you know, and I was like I could get all the government grants at that point. I was considered like a permanent resident or a citizen. Not a citizen, but I was a permanent resident. So I applied for this government grant to make a record, and I got like $6,000 at that point to make this record. And so I made it. So that was when Teeth and Tongue started. It was a solo project, and I was already making, I had a version of Logic, that I ripped off. I was living in this crazy warehouse with all these other musicians who were making like hip hop and stuff. So someone had given me this huge bank of drum sounds, and I was making drum beats, like beat by beat on a grid on Logic, and I started writing this music that was sort of had electronic drums and guitars and stuff. And so that was Teeth and Tongue. And then the first record I made, I got it with that project, because I'd made EPs and stuff before with Moscow Schoolboy, and one of the songs that got played on the national radio station and everything. And then, yeah, Teeth and Tongue was a solo project, but the producer that I ended up working with, he was a great producer, but he wanted to put everything in that I'd done as real instruments. So I've kind of been using all these kooky, like, synthesized sounds and fake drums and weird, like, fake Rhodes and stuff. And he wanted to replace them all with, like, a real Rhodes and a church and real drums and everything like that. And it was cool, but it ended up being a really different record than I think I wanted it to be. But that was the first record, and that did okay. You know, I got a song on a bunch of radio.
I want to play Callback.
Mm-hmm. This is much later, Teeth and Tongue, but it's still that same.
When the talking gets old and faces they bleed into each other, and the bitterness grows and the emptiness can't be filled any longer, call back, ask me to be your woman. That's when you'll call back, asking me all the right questions.
Sky, you'll get by. smile through your fears and sorrow. Smile and maybe then tomorrow you'll find that life still worthwhile. You just smile. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near. It's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use in crying? You'll find that life still worthwhile. You just smile. Light up your face with gladness. Hide every trace of sadness. Although a tear may be ever so near. Time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use in crying? You'll find that life still worthwhile. You just smile.
What for Pedro show. Yeah. Teeth and Tongue, but not early Teeth and Tongue.
Nice.
Much more recently. Callback. Before that, Dex Rom Weber. Incredible guitar man. North Carolina with Smile. Had that band Flat Duo Jets with the drummer man just named Crow. His name's Crow. Ill, these four ladies from England, gave me their CD after a gig once at the, what was it called, upstairs. Yeah, the boss was a lady. She had all these bourbons. But anyway, that's Kremlin. God damn. It's a great place to play. So like the quietest is there, if you know this website, and they're located there. But after that, Thorn Friends out of Austin with Resist, Round Eye out of Shanghai, guess who's coming to dinner? Hey, Judge. And then finally, Do Harm from Teeth and Tongue. So, solo band, it gets a big helping hand from a producer.
Mm-hmm.
But you kept the... You kept this project going, evidently.
Yeah, yeah, we made...
It lasted longer than the producer.
Definitely. Well, it became kind of... So I put a band together to play the record live. So it became kind of a live band thing. And then the second, I think, So we had a live drummer. And then I kind of stopped using the live drummer, and we were doing shows just with a 505 drum machine, you know, a Roland 505 drum machine, and a guitarist and a bass player, and me playing guitar as well. So two guitars, bass player, and a Roland 505. And I had this guitarist called Mike Reguero McAlvey, and he ended up being in the band for the rest of the time that it existed. He was very instrumental in the sound of the record, sound of the band, sorry, in the end. He played a lot of, he came from this real 90s grunge noise kind of scene.
What was the big band? Silverchair.
No, well, that was earlier. That was when I was a teenager.
That's
and that
90s,
was,
right? That's like
that
90s.
That was 90s, yeah.
When I think
but,
of grunge, I think of Silverchair. But then I also met a young guy. He's still going. Wolf Mother.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that band. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which I liked a little better. And I, yeah. In fact, I got to meet this guy, Andrew, and great cat. Look, Jess, we're at the end of the second hour, the 1st of July, 2020. People, special guest, Jess Cornelius, hold tap for hour 3. July 1, 2020, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
to take you on a trip down a path you've never known, where the people come and go. They live their lives, but they don't know what's really going on. Let me wake you from the dream, and they cast a spell. There's no tomorrow. You know I've been here many times. It's still a mystery in my mind. What's really going on? Yeah, what's really going on? Deja vu. Another time, another place, the same soul, just a different face. Is it true? Ooh, deja vu. Well, I've seen this all before. Walked the path, knocked on the door. And no, I've been here many times. Still the mystery's in my mind. What's really going on?
Look what you've done, what you give up the love.
Pedro Show started off the third hour with Teeth and Tongue doing Sad Song, the original. I guess there was another version.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fofum, that's from Crane and myself. I mean, from a long time ago, Crane had a tape of this. One Day, a live prac. I think that band only did one gig. Crane himself with What Am I Supposed to Do? He's living up in Idaho these days. Some Nomad Eel stuff, Living Mars with Transition, Atlantis Aquarius with Deja Voodoo, and finally, Good Man from Teeth and Tongue. So look, how did you get to Echo Park?
So I made my final record with Teeth and Tongue in 2016. Well, we put it out in 2016. And at that point, the band had really kind of become like a four-piece band in a way, or five-piece. We also had a keyboardist. And I wasn't really playing solo much anymore. But things were going well. You know, things had been going really well. We'd, you know, sort of established ourselves in Australia. And we could tour and everything. And I'd come to the States a few times to play CMJ or South By or do tours and things. And, you know, it was good. But it just felt like I'd reached this point there where I couldn't, you know, do much more in that, you know, musical climate. And I also just, I guess in my life, I wanted a big change. I wasn't, I hadn't planned to be in Melbourne for 18, 19 years. And I had a US visa before. So I applied for another one, which is kind of a big ordeal if you ever tried to get it.
Yeah, no, I've heard about it. It's terrible.
So I managed to get an O-1 visa, which is, you know, the artist visa for 3 years. And so I just decided to move here, you know, rather than come and try and do, like, bits and pieces. I was like, well, I'll just move, you know. And I had also just made a solo EP under my own name, you know, for the first time in a long time. So I put that out, and I had, you know, a bit of publicity happening in the U.S. and things. So I just moved over, and I also got a tour with Paul Kelly, who's like this, you know, Australian artist. And so I came and did this big US tour with him on his bus, 24 states, and then just stayed, for a few months in LA and thought, well, I'll just see if LA is where I want to be, you know, rather than like New York or whatever. And when I went to New York, everyone was like, hey, it's a great city, but don't move here. You know, it's really hard to move here, like to live here. When I went to LA, everyone was like, yeah, it's a great city to live, you know. So I decided on LA and I loved it. You know, it was a weird place initially. It's compared to a place where, you know, I've always grown up in places I can walk around very easily and, you know, walk from A to B, ride my bike from A to B, not be very car reliant. So yeah, it was a shock, but the people I met initially were just, I was really lucky. I met a bunch of, I used to go to Zebulon all the time and Bootleg all the time. And the Moroccan Lounge, I just went to gigs, you know, gigs and gigs and gigs and met people. And I ended up meeting great musicians and starting, you know, I had a drummer by the first month, and then a bass player. So I had a band, and I moved into a house which had a practice room, you know, because they were all musicians. So we had a practice room in the house with drums and a PA and everything. So I just got really lucky, you know. It was a really good place to start in LA, and started playing shows. Yeah.
You know, we got a couple more Teeth and Tongue songs that you gave me, so mm-hmm. Let's listen.
Every mistake that you made has a purpose. You're bigger than us now, you fucked up. the dead air. Like a dead beach with too much down time. The dead hand, dead end, has the dead ball, dead center, and the dead eye, dead duck, dying. So I reeled in the static like a radio on shore leave with a seagull antenna, a seagull antenna that was crying. It cried, boo-hoo. To have a word with the bullets and the stars that glow in the dark. You know, that glow that's so absurd. Yeah, Buddha was bubbling on down the road. So I decided to have a word with the bullets and stars that glow in the dark. You know that glow? That's so absurd. To the suns, passed on the ammo, kept running his mouth while I stood there going, but, then I decided to go remind him in no uncertain terms of the most unkindest up and honk his little red nose. another know-it-all fool. I took on a stroll. Yeah, I took to school to fuck off in study hall with to show and tell. Saturday detention. Oh, well. What's time anyway when you can sit and spin inside a mind, inside a universe, inside a dopey grin on the face of the head and heart that pumps the blood and the breath to the silly little, the killer, the killer, the killer of life and death. Man, what's time anyway when you can sit and spin inside a mind, inside a universe, inside a dopey grin on the face of the head and the heart that pumps the blood and the breath to the silly little killer of life and death right. Can kill life and death, when you can kill life and death, and particularly death, it sounds like this.
Okay, last music for this edition. We had Teeth and Tongue with Turn, Turn, Turn. Iggy and the Stooges, live in Tokyo, 2004. This is I Wanna Be Your Dog, but the double dog. We used to, in these days, for some reason, we would play I Wanna Be Your Dog twice. So the second time around, Iggy would call it the double dog. Brother Steve would play this. OMFU, which is Old Man Fuck You, out of Knoxville, Tennessee, with That Silly Little Killer of Life and Death. Mike Baghetta and Henry Kaiser. Mike Baghetta living in Knoxville. Henry Kaiser up in Santa Cruz when he ain't skin diving at Antarctica. Shorter duet from June 2020. Groove Crater Meth has Brother Phil up in Big Bear with Meanwhile Under the Rainbow. And finally, Cupcake, another original version from Teeth and Tongue. So what's your next plan, Jess?
Well, I have a one-week-old baby. Now,
probably to raise the baby.
Sorry?
The next plan is probably to raise the baby.
Raise the baby. But I have, you know, I have this record coming out on the 24th of July. So it's all happening at once. I still wanted to make one more video. I don't know if that's going to happen. I have like 2 weeks to make a video. But we'll see. So we'll see how she goes with the next couple of weeks of her life. And I plan to tour, you know, when we can tour again, with my daughter. So it's going to be a challenge, you know. It's going to be different to every other sort of musical phase of my life. But the record, you know, that I'm about to put out, I feel like is, you know, I'm excited about it, and there's people helping me out, and there's, you know, I feel like I've kind of invested in it. So I want to follow through with that as much as I can and play it live. And, yeah, I feel good about it, but it's definitely going to be a different situation this time around. But I never ever intend to stop making records. So, or touring them, you know, really.
Where can people find you on the internet?
So, well, I mean, everywhere, I guess. You know, it's just on all the streaming platforms, blah, blah, blah.
But is there a Jess Cornelius website?
Yeah, there is, actually.
Thank God. Yeah. Because that's like having your own fanzine. There's no middleman, right? No filter.
Yeah.
You can put your flyers on those other telephone poles. That's okay. But to have your own, I think that's important, you know?
That's it. Yeah. Okay. So jeffcornelius.com.
Right. And people, it's got one L, because a lot of Cornelius has two L's.
Got it. Yeah, right. Yeah, didn't know that.
I did, because I was searching around.
Oh. Yeah.
And, yeah, more conventional way is two, but you're unconventional. Look, I want to ask you, if somebody young, like a young woman, or young man, or even your daughter, wanted to get in this music racket, what kind of advice would you give?
I mean, I'd say do it for sure, and just have, this is going to sound terrible, have low expectations in terms of what you think the world is going to give you, but do it for your own reasons, you know, because you'll keep going forever if you're doing it because you just love making music, and because there's a lot of shit that comes with it, you know, as I'm sure you would know, you know, it's not always easy and it's not always rewarding, and there's a lot of free work that you do all the time. But if you just feel compelled to keep making music, you just keep doing it. So, you know, and eventually people will get on board, I guess.
Yeah, I always tell myself, whenever you play what, you're invested in the next time you play.
Yeah. That's it.
Okay. No. And not all payment is from the coin.
That's it. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Jess, it's been a big honor to have you on the show. I wish you success with the new music. And and raising the family and everything. I mean, it's great. It's great. Thank you so much. People, it's been the you're quite welcome. July 1, 2020, this is Walk for Peter Show. Everybody, keep your powder dry.